Welcome to the Simon Parkes Connecting Consciousness Show, produced by Ever Beyond Radio and broadcast on Wolf Spirit Radio on the first and third Sundays of the month at 7 p.m. UK time. Simon actively encourages you to join the conversation by using the Ask Question menu link at the top of the page at wowwowwow.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. Please come early to ask your questions. Now, on with the show. The next 2 hours will be full of debate, interview guests and up-to-date news. Please join Simon and play an active role. Connecting Consciousness Show. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio. It is the 6th of August, 2017. This is Connecting Consciousness on Ever Beyond Radio and Wolf Spirit Radio. And the Wolf Spirit Radio website has just crashed. If you want to connect with the chat room, you can go to wolfspiritradiochat.chatango.com, where it's on permanently. And you can also go to everbeyondradio.com. You'll pick up the everything. You'll pick up the transmission and the chat room. So yes, indeed, we have plenty of people logging on. I can see the numbers mounting quickly, and that's why the system crashes. But anyway, here we are. Good afternoon, Simon. Good evening, Simon. How are you?
Hi, JP. Hello to all the fantastic listeners. Yeah, I'm all right. Seems an age, doesn't it, since I was able to last connect.
Yeah, well, the last time you were kind of stuck in traffic and you did an hour-long thing, and before that you were away. So this is the first full two-hour show, hopefully, that we'll have for a while. So let's get into some good stuff. Now, since the website crashed, maybe it hasn't crashed. Now, let me see if I've got the thing back. Oh yeah, I've got it back. Great. Let's get some messages out. Thankfully, when the site crashes, it's only a couple minutes before it comes. Oh, okay, there it goes again. It's due to intense pressure of people logging in all at the same time. It's like 500 people trying to get into a tiny double door. Okay, so anyway, Simon, I'm sure you've got some...
Do you advise people to stagger when they log in with that whole system?
Yes, because everybody's arriving exactly on the hour, on the dot of the hour, and then everybody's trying to get in at the same time. There's plenty of nice people in the chat room you can chat to, so come early and you know, get used to everybody and say hello and be pleasant. it's a nice place. We make sure that it's a nice place for people to come. So, I'll be getting the questions in a few minutes, I imagine, Simon. So, I'm sure you have some announcements for your groups and things.
Okay.
So, I'll let you know when I'm getting the questions back.
That's fine. Well, one of the reasons also it's been such a long time, it was a 5-week month last time. So the Sunday that we thought we would all be doing it, of course we weren't. So I just wanted to recap a bit. You remember I talked about the brake cables, and they couldn't decide whether these cables were just corroded through wear or something else had happened. But what they did say was that it was incredibly unusual for both cables to go at the same time. And I remember I told everyone that it was £550 to put right, because in my particular model, my car's 10 years old. Actually, it's 11 years old. The brake cables go behind the fuel tank. So in order to get at the bulk of the cable, they had to take the fuel tank down. I didn't ask for money from anybody. I just reported that. I am so grateful to so many of you who immediately responded. Although I didn't actually ask you for any money, you responded within minutes. Now, it cost me £550, and I got donated £625. So I was able to pay that back, and I had a few pounds left over. So all those of you who responded within seconds or minutes, and, you know, within the first 3 or 4 days, that's how much managed to raise up. So that was great. You also remember that I missed a show, and I had to, JP's just said, I had to do a little follow-up. And that was because as I was coming back, there was a tanker had spilled a load of oil. And where I live, it's not like in a city where if the police close a road off, you can just go around the corner. So where this oil spill had occurred, there was only one turn off to get to where I live, and that was an hour and a half's detour. So that's what happened there. And it's very strange that they had the brake cables go and then the oil. Now, on a more serious note, there has been a psychic attack here, more of a presence, really. I haven't got a huge amount of information, but I'm going to tell you what happened. One of the cats, not my cat, one of the cats here in this house, wasn't very well. And when I had a look at the cat, there was a bit of blood on the top of the bed. So cat was taken to the vet, who x-rayed and said that it had a multiple fracture in its back leg. Now, this is a cat that doesn't go out. None of the cats in this house go out at all. They're all indoor cats. And the vets couldn't understand how an indoor cat could have a multiple fracture. So bad was this fracture that they've had to amputate the cat's back leg.
Oh, poor thing.
The cat sort of hop along now, doing very well. And the information that I got's been quite sparse, but the information I got was that something entered the house, an energy form through a portal, and the cat just attacked it. It wasn't in a human form, obviously, this thing. It was whatever. And the cat just went for it. And I think when you have a positive and negative energy, the cat, I presume, was thrown backwards violently and sustained that damage. So, you know, we had the brake cables go within a very few days, had the oil on the road, which made me miss a show, and then we had that as well. So something, somebody really doesn't like what I'm up to. And although it's no consolation to me, I sort of say, well, look, at least I'm being attacked. There are a number of people who are much more well-known than I am, you know, rolling in money, I think, and they never report they get attacked. They never seem to get attacked. And I always think, well, I wonder why that is. You know, well, why aren't you being attacked? So I suppose I don't look on it as a badge of honour, because how can it be honour to have all these troubles and problems? But I do take it that I must be doing some good for something negative to be so concerned with me that it's throwing just about everything it can. So that's been rather distressing and rather difficult. It hasn't in one jot pushed me off course. It hasn't stopped me, and I will continue to do what I do. Anyway, let's get on to some world news. I've been posting stuff on my website regarding the financial situation. And I know it's, oh, that old chestnut again. People for 25 years plus have been talking about a financial collapse, and it never seems to come. But this year, for the first time, we've had major British newspapers covering it on the front page. The Telegraph, The Times, The Daily Express, all of these papers have covered it, to the extent that one major newspaper said it. They were predicting a 1929 Wall Street crash lookalike. Now, what's happened, a couple of days ago, the European Central Bank has written to all of its member states, and I presume that includes Britain, because we're still part of the European Union, saying that it didn't want individual countries to maintain the guaranteed protection scheme. Now, I don't think there are many of us that have sort of 80-odd thousand pounds in the bank, but in Britain and European countries, you can have a set amount of money in the bank, and if the government steals it from you, it's under a set figure, it's obliged to pay it back to you. I think it's about £85,000 at the moment. So whether you've got £10 in the bank or £100,000, a bail-in means that they take the money out of your bank account without your permission, they hold on to it for 2 weeks, and then supposedly they'll pay it back. So if you had £100,000, they would pay you back £85,000 back of that. The rest they would just keep. Of course, if you do that on the street, that's called a mugging, and you call the police, and if you catch the person, hopefully there's a, you know, prison sentence or something or other. But when the government does it, it's perfectly legal. So this is called a guaranteed protection scheme, and all the banks in Great Britain are obliged to do it, as they are in all European countries. Well, the European Central Bank has written to all of the major banks throughout the European Union saying to do away with it. Now that's astonishing, absolutely astonishing. They've also suggested that banks get ready to freeze accounts. So that means that the bank's still open, but you're not allowed to draw any money out of your bank. So they're looking to rob us and freeze us. what a combination. And this is absolutely true. This isn't crackpot news. This is really what they're planning. And the reason they're planning this is because I and others, I've been saying this for about 3 years regularly. Others have been saying it as well. But in October, there is the potential for quite a big meltdown. Three still employed CIA operatives have made it clear that the software they use, and remember they're not the National Security Agency, so they don't have access to the NSA's supercomputers, but nevertheless, they're probably receiving information through the back door from the NSA. They said they've done some modeling, and these three CIA guys are basically saying, we see a potential situation in October. Now, they weren't saying exactly what it was, but they were seeing October. So everywhere we're looking, there is a very big sign that October is going to be it. Look at the Dow Jones, incredibly high, the highest it's ever been in its history, and the FTSE Stock Exchange, incredibly high. There isn't much further for these stocks to go. And all it will take is one person to say, I don't think there's any more money left in this, pull it out, and that starts a panic. So, you know, if you can afford to buy gold, buy gold. Although it is quite high, if a really serious situation occurs, gold will go up in value. So gold is a good investment. Probably don't leave any more in the bank than you need to. Enough just to keep your bills ticking over. Probably better to hide it somewhere in the house, simply because if you leave it in the bank and they do a bail-in, they'll take your money. So that's that. Right, I want to talk about the situation in North Korea. It's far more serious than the media are letting know. the reason for wars not always covered. You never get the truth. When I say covered, I mean it's like putting a blanket across it. You never get the real truth. The point for Korea is that in the north, there are a lot of caves, as there were in Vietnam, and there's a huge amount of gold stored at the moment in North Korea. There's also some precious metals in the earth for mining, which the West, when I say the West, of course, I mean the negative people in the States. Remember, there's lots of good people in the States. But these negative people want to get their hands on the gold that's hidden. This is Asian gold. It's dragon gold. And also access to some of these materials for mining. They can't do anything while Russia and China protect Korea. But Russia has said that it's no longer interested and has walked away from it. And the US are now trying to strike some sort of deal with China. What that means is not just United States bombing, but boots on the ground. In other words, there are serious not quite while we speak, but there has been a meeting this morning, British time, looking at a strike by stealth aircraft, cruise missiles, and then followed up by a small landing force. Now, that may sound horrendous when we just think back to some of the wars that we've had in the last 20-odd years, but there are a number of US generals who have been itching for a conflict with the North for a very long time. Now, it's debatable whether this rocket that the North Koreans fired actually could hit the US, but on paper, it could. We know that North Korea has a nuclear bomb. I mean, people are being very dodgy about this. They are. They got hold of about three or four rucksack bombs. The US created for its counterinsurgency and insurgency program a small, very small nuclear bomb that you would carry in your rucksack and that could just be left and detonated. So it's not just fundamentalists who have rucksack bombs. They do it in the West as well, but the West does it with a nuclear bomb. Now, I don't know the ins and outs of this, but three of these at least fell into the hands of North Korea. North Korea has access to 22, 23-year-old Chinese satellite technology, and it's satellite rockets that the Koreans are using from China, and they potentially could put one of these rucksack bombs into the missile. What they don't have is a proper detonation device for it. They haven't been able to work out how to detonate it. But nevertheless, that's how far they've got. Now, the public are not being told that. And that is why it's very, very real that there could be a small war. Are wars ever small? But I don't mean it would spread within the next 6 weeks. The pivotal organization here is China. Because if China basically goes in there and says to North Korea, you've got to stop this, there'll be no war. But if China says to America, give us a cut of the gold, there'll be a war. So we've got some potential boiling points. And I'll obviously keep my eye on that, as I'm sure other people will. But it's not a talking point in Britain, but in America it is. And, you know, it should be our concern. It really should be our concern. In terms of general things, I just wanted to thank the London Connecting Conscience Group. I know you've sent me a few emails, and I've, as you'll now realize, I've been somewhat taken busy with bits, but thank you for being so active. Thank you for copying me in. I always try and read them when I can. Again, although we've got these things, there's still a lull before the storm. You know, Parliament goes on holiday, lawmakers go on holiday, the civil service shuts down partially, school teachers go on holiday. And so it seems that they don't want to put the news out. They don't want to do things. And when we sort of get into September, then things kick off again. So what I suggest we do is that we try and keep our eye on the major news, but we still try and prepare and think about things because we are approaching October. And if the situation does not improve, there will be some form of difficulty in October. All right, that'll do. I think I'll take some questions now, JP.
Okie doke. Right, so you hear me all right?
Yes, fine.
Good, good.
You haven't turned us off yet.
No, I've got a weird, something went wrong with my headphones earlier, and I can't seem to hear myself as, hello, hello. I'm coming across. Anyway, all right, so, anyway, let's see if I turn it that way. That might work. I'll try that. Okay, from our first questioner from Denmark. Dear Simon, back in May, I had a dream where I was told to get a parrot. When I woke up, I had the biggest urge to get one, so I went out and bought a cage and all the food and vitamins they need. I then went on the internet and tried to find people that sell parrots. The first person I contacted had a male that was in perfect condition, but for whatever reason, they had not been able to sell him. He has made incredible progress in the 2 months that I've had him, and I've even had parrot experts tell me that they're amazed by how much he has changed in just 2 months, from hardly ever being touched by a person to now being as loving as a dog or a cat. I feel a bond to him that is very similar to the bond I had with the dog that I grew up with. She passed away 5 years ago. He has even helped with reducing my depression. Is this all just a coincidence, or could it be that him and I were meant to be together? Much love and peace from Denmark.
I think anyone who's not spiritual would obviously think we'd all gone mad. because they don't understand. They really don't understand. What we don't hear and what we don't know is quite how this message was relayed to the questioner. In other words, whether they heard a voice, whether they had a feeling, whether they saw an image to get a parrot. It was obviously well defined enough for them to know it was a parrot and not a cat or a dog. What the questioner has not alluded to is that it is highly likely that the soul in the animal that they had is now in the soul of the parrot, depending if it's a 5-year gap, I think, depending how old the parrot was. There are a number of instances on this planet where a human can have such a strong bond with an animal. We tend to think of a horse or a cat or a dog, but it's not exclusive. It can be such a strong bond that when one or the other dies physically in the body, when it comes back, it seeks to find the companion. And sometimes many lifetimes go by and they don't meet up, and then suddenly they do. So I would fairly confidently say that if you were led to getting something, and even when you go on the internet or when you go into a shop to buy something, it will work that way. It's source that is making it happen. So I would fully accept that. I would say that the soul in the parrot is the soul, somebody, an animal that you have had a connection with. So you will be happier, and so will the animal be happier, because you are reunited. It's a lovely story. That's the sort of story that we should end on. So I always like to end on good stories, and we're starting on a good story, so thank you.
Well, you know, this is from the same... hello, parrot. Is there a parrot in the background, isn't there? This is the same guy. I think it's a guy. When I was about 11 years old, I had a near-death experience where my soul left my body. I was being lifted towards the sky, and then suddenly I felt something grab me and drag me back down into my body. After my near-death experience, I sent into a crippling depression with suicidal thoughts on a daily basis. One night, I then prayed to God and asked him for help. I asked him to help me get better. A few days later, I then woke up and heard a voice in my head. The voice said to me, "I am here to help you get where you need to go, and I will tell you what you need to hear in order to get there." He told me to do things such as watch certain movies that would have hidden messages that I would learn from. For 8 to 9 years, he has helped me spiritually evolve and has saved me from suicide multiple times. However, I have experienced really horrible things in my life. I have seen shadow beings. I have felt fingers tapping on my back. I've seen jinn, and other people also see them when they are near me. I've had attacks during my sleep. I have woken up covered in scratch marks. I have felt mice crawling on my skin under a blanket. I've had my energy completely drained. He has helped me to learn to protect myself, so I don't experience most of these things anymore. However, he will not tell me why I've had these experiences. He always gives me the same line. The experiences you have had are for you to learn and not for me to tell. Could you please explain to me what exactly he is, and what do you believe his purpose is? And why I've had all these unpleasant experiences? So, the flip side of the parrot question.
Right. I'm not clear from that, actually, who is speaking to him. It's not the parrot, is it?
No. I'll read back. He just said, one night I prayed to God and asked him to help me get better. Then he woke up and heard a voice in his head.
Right, I just thought this was a parrot in the room next door.
No. Not that. Arr.
That's it. Right, okay. I have serious doubts. Right. The person has got multiple, I mean, this is obvious, but that's how I start my thinking process off, has got multiple interactions going on, which are not just reptilian. And that makes it serious, because it means that this person's on their radar, and they're all targeting this person. And the question is why, and I don't know. Without meeting this person, I can't answer that question. There are a lot of reasons why certain individuals seem to unfortunately get attacked by so many different species and groups from different damned dimensions. And it's not all just coming from one of the same dimension. I'm a bit concerned because if I was to ask my mum, the being that I call mum, a question as to, you know, why is X or Y attacking me, then I would get a very straight answer back. To say to somebody, well, look, you're going through this because it's your job to learn, I don't buy that. I personally don't believe that many of us, excuse me, many of us sign up to be hurt because we want to learn from it. I think there's plenty enough pain in the world that we go through that we have the opportunity to learn from it. I don't think many of us would say, I wish to be born into a family and abused. I wish to walk across the road and get hit by a car, etc., etc., because, you know what, I'm going to learn from that. So I don't accept that. And I think that this person is being a little bit disingenuous. What you've also written is that he's got rid of some of it, but not all of it. If something loves you, it will do everything for you. And it should be unconditional love. It shouldn't be, well, you know, this or that. It's all or nothing. That's what true source is about. So I'm rather concerned that you may be hoodwinked. You may think this is source, but it isn't. It's another entity. They often play good cop, bad cop. That's how they often do it. You've accurately described certain things, so I know that you are very genuine and that you are being attacked. You're not mad. This is a real phenomenon. It's going to do with past life stuff, and don't accept that you made a contract. I do accept that you probably in a previous life have held positions which have brought you into contact with these things, and have probably been at war with them. So the best thing would be to try and get hold of me and see if I can help. I can't do any more without seeing you, asking you questions, looking at photographs of your parents, and getting some descriptions of these things that are attacking you. But my message to you is only trust yourself. Be very careful of things that seem to be doing something for you, but not everything. You know, it's rather like the story of I don't know who it was, Abraham, Moses. Now I get confused with all these bearded gentlemen. But basically, he was going to stab his child as a proof to God that he really loved God. And just as he was about to stab the child, his only son, God said, no, you don't need to do that. It's all right. You've proved your love to me. Well, a real good creator doesn't do that. You love someone, you love someone. You don't make them almost kill somebody to prove you love them. So what I'm saying is that there are things in history that pretend to be something else. There is a source, there is a real God, but there's, for every real source and real God, there's a whole bunch of hangers-on who are pretending to be that individual. And what we have to do is to use discernment and judgment and ask our soul what we think's happening. So please be careful. So thanks for that.
Yeah, it's a tricky one because he says it saved him from suicide several times and, you know, it gets you at vulnerable places. So, another strange experience. Do you want to respond to that?
I will respond to it because it's a question that's valuable. Sometimes when I answer questions, I may seem harsh and I'm really not. People who really know me know that I'm not. But when you're dealing with some of the most evilest energies on the planet, you know, I can't be like some of these people who burst into tears on television or show a weak side. And what I may say now may sound very harsh, but it is factually accurate. If an entity or entities have an investment, that's how it is, not money, it's energy, have an energy investment in a human being on this planet, and that human being kills themselves, those entities have no investment. So that is one reason why somebody might try to commit suicide several times, but is prevented from doing so simply because the entities there, their free lunch ticket would go. Now, the law of the universe actually is that if you are attached as an entity to a human and that human dies, your contract in that lifetime's over. So you have to leave through the portal, go back to where you went from, and then wait for another opportunity to come along. So I'm not at all surprised that it's prevented that. There's another thing that's even worse. There's, when you're trying to break somebody, and there's the old saying of give them love and take it away again. Well, if you can manipulate someone to the point of suicide and then bring them back, the burst of energy that is being released at both points at the moment of just about going to do it and the great relief when you don't, that can be fed on. And, you know, pushing humans to their limits creates a very strong chemical reaction and a very strong energy reaction. So I rather think that there's some manipulation going on here. So maybe I'm just cynical, but I've been doing this now for 7 years. And I have seen hundreds of people, probably thousands now. And this story is, it's unusual, but it's not unique. So I've had probably about 7 or 8 people with very similar stories. And that's beginning to form a pattern. So I would just be careful. So thank you. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Here's from Central Austria, not Central Australia, CC Central Austria. Can you tell us more about the feline race? What is their culture like? What is their agenda here on Earth? And how are they connected to the pyramids? Thanks from Hazelnut.
Hazelnut, okay. excuse me. My American colleagues and American clients, there's a misconception, particularly in the States, the Lyran connection. Whenever you say Lyran, many Americans think of Leo the Lion. And so when I have the great privilege of communicating with a Lyran, and they immediately start talking about lions and cats, and I have to explain to them, no, that's not actually where they come from. So if you've been thinking that, then no, that's not the case. And two major sources of habitable planets where these creatures are, one is one of the Orion planets, and then the other one is the Sirius or Sirius group. The ones from the Orion were allied to the Orion Empire. So the reptilian-y type beings that dominated the Orion sector brought the Orion feline group under their sway. So it was a business arrangement. They didn't control them or subjugate them, but they hired them. Now that's an interesting point. They hired them because they got hired to build part of the pyramid. So the history is that they originated, to my knowledge, on one of the planets in the Orion sector, were already part of the Orion Empire. It's a feminine-controlled race. I don't think we can say divine feminine. They have a lot of humanity to them, but they're not fully human. But nevertheless, they are a matriarchal society. And they're grouping stratified into two groups, simply the royal family, let's say, royal group, and everybody else. And it was sort of like a peasant type existence in the sense that, not technologically, but in terms of the gulf between the ruling elite and everyone else. You know, in this world, and certainly in our society, there are tiers. So you've got the royal family, but then you've got people who have a huge amount of money or politics or in the church, which take them some way between the rest of us on the ground floor and the royal family. But in the feline group, there's nothing in the middle. It's just us and them. But because of the way that they feel there isn't this need to have a revolution. They don't feel that this group is forcing down on them. They work quite happily. But there was a split, and I've got no time on this, I don't know. There was a split, and quite a group of them left the Orion planet they were on and went and resettled in Cyrus or Sirius. And they go by the name, accurately pronounced as Ket-Kuri. Ket-Kuri. Now, this group have worked with humans for a very long time and are very well known to the American military. Now, I do love the Americans, and people know that I really do, but some American military men can't pronounce English words very well, and they can't say Ket-Kuri, so they pronounce it as Kilroti. Kilroti. And in fact, some commentators refer to them as the Kilroti. This is a group that, even to this day, or I think probably the most recent would be 5 years ago, have had some interaction with the military. This group, again, feminine controlled. They don't wear clothes. They are naked, except the royal family, who wear a cape or a cloak. They have, like many off-planet entities, their rank or badge of office or insignia was carried around their neck. So they, different members of the royal family have different emblems which they'd wear around their neck. The one I've seen is representing the flying lions, because these beings have the ability to teleport themselves. And that's quite exciting. It's the only off-planet entity that has entered my house in a flying mode. Most entities that have come to visit me sort of step in, as it were, or they walk through, or they just appear. But the Ket-Kuri, when they visited me, they appear and they are moving. They're flying. They're about 6 foot off the ground, and they are not like Superman flies, but they are with their arms by their sides, and then they will do a very graceful turn in the air and then land. And they are known as the flying lions, and their emblem is literally a lion flying. It looks a bit like a seagull. You know, if you were to take a drawing of a seagull and put it on its side with the two wings outspread. So their emblem is the flying lion. If you go back to the final part of the question, if you go back to ancient Egypt, there are lots and lots of carvings which are passed off as just simply people who have got masks on their faces. Well, I don't think so. I think the Egyptians were intelligent enough and clever enough to, you know, show what they were seeing. And so what we've got here is a number of processions, which are carved around the time of the pyramid date, showing these lion-type beings. And indeed, one of the goddess of the ancient Egyptians was indeed a lion. And that is why, right through after the gods had left and the pharaohs were there, it was a capital offense to get in the way of a cat. So anywhere in Cairo, this time of the pharaohs, if a cat was walking, you couldn't stop it. You couldn't bar its way. It's a bit like India and the white cow. And the last pharaoh of Egypt, Cleo, and Cleopatra, was very well known that she had panthers, a black panther, leopards, and domestic cats. And so what these people did, who had no longer had the access to the technology, they wanted to keep the population under control. So they said, we are connected to the gods, and the gods speak to us through our cats. So this is why they had these cats walking around, so they could continually go back to the populace and say, well, you know, we still have the right to rule. That's very fascinating, very interesting. The feline species were allied to the reptilian species up to about 7 years ago. 7 years ago, they split and became independent. Lots of groups have become independent from the reptilians. So thank you. Good question.
One last question is, how do you spell Ket-Kuri?
you're asking me.
I know. I was going to get, but, I mean, is it with K's or C's and, I's and Y's or what?
Ah, right. Well, let me just write on a bit of paper. I mean, you know, I'm.
Because all I get when I Google it is a crab curry stir fry, and I don't think so.
Well, you see, the thing is that an American might spell it with a K, and a British person might spell it with a C. And I have never seen it written down. I have only been told it in my mind, what they've been called. And when I've spoken to American military personnel, again, it's been verbally. So it's going to be something like K-E-T, and then either Kerry with a K or a C, but it could be K-E-I-R. You've got to try a number of groups. I mean, we have to remember that when you go on the internet, very, very few people have had connection with this particular species. Very few people. So there's going to be nothing on the YouTube probably. There's, to my knowledge, only one book, and it's very small, which I did get. That didn't tell me very much, but it was the only book I could find. And so when a group is very poorly known, there's no interest in it. You know, that's the thing. That's what happens on this planet. We don't seem to research it. But there are people out there. And one of the reasons that there isn't a lot of information is that these animals are very sexual, and they will seek sex with a human male or female, and because they're very compatible. And they have been doing this since Babylonian times. Now, very few people are going to come forward and say, I saw this cat and it wanted to go to bed with me. And that is one of the major reasons why so few people will come forward about this group and why there's so little information on the internet. But no, I can't spell it. I haven't a clue.
Well, that's you know, at least we've got some ideas. Right, okay. People are complaining there's no audio. Yes, there's audio, lots of audio, plenty of audio. Just keep trying. Right, so let's...
They wouldn't lie, JP. They obviously can't hear it.
Yeah, obviously. Well, I mean, there you know, there is audio. I know that there's audio. It's whether they can receive it or not, that's the thing.
Well, they're doing their best.
It's like listening, you know. You can talk as much as you like. If nobody's listening, then nobody's hearing. So, dear Simon, I was wondering if there's anything special about green eyes. I'm asking because I've always had a strange attraction to people with green eyes. It's not a sexual attraction or even loving attraction. The best way I can describe this attraction is loyalty. Okay. Whenever I meet a person with green eyes, I feel extremely compelled to protect and take care of that person, even if we're completely different, have nothing in common. Earlier this year, I even had a dream where I met an evil person that shapeshifted into a reptilian, and despite the fact that the person was evil, I found myself saying, "Don't be shy, you have beautiful green eyes, you have nothing to be afraid of." Green has always been my favorite color, and most of the clothes I wear are green because it makes me happy to look at. Is there anything special about the color green, or am I simply crazy about that color?
I wish sometimes we would get someone write in, say that this evil person shapeshifted into a Palladian. That would make a change, wouldn't it? There's a lot going on here. There's the potential of this person being a mother or a father to a green-eyed child a number of lifetimes ago. That's coming through quite strongly for me. And as a result of that, you would want to protect and even hide the child. Latest research is probably between 1.8 and 2.6% of the entire global population have green eyes. So less than 3% of the entire human race have green eyes. So that gives you your answer immediately as to, is it unusual? Is it special? People with green eyes aren't special. I've got green eyes. What it means is that something has occurred. See, I don't buy into all this doctor stuff. I just don't. If eye color is a color, it's because energies have made it that way. So somebody from the fifth dimension will normally have blue eyes. Somebody from the fourth dimension or the sixth dimension will normally have brown eyes. And anyone who's got green eyes is usually because something's happened in past lifetimes to take them into the control system. So you would expect somebody with green eyes in a previous lifetime to have been part of the control network. And I've always said this, that, you know, if you take some of the most elitist on the land, and I mean elite in terms of their money and their wealth and their power, and who employ people, they will actively seek people with green eyes for positions of responsibility within their organization. And they will seek people with blue eyes for your meet and greeters. So if you are going to perform on stage or dance or sing, or hand out drinks, then you will have blue eyes. But if you're going to be responsible for the top man's agenda and keeping him on track with his phone calls, you will have green eyes, because these elite people still hold true to this pattern. It's the same with the rhesus negative blood. You know, if those of you who have dialogue with off-planet entities, you should ask them, who've got rhesus negative, ask them, why have I got rhesus negative blood? I'd be very interested in the replies they give you. If they're truthful, they should give you the same answer. I'm not going to preempt it, but they should all give you the same answer. So green eyes, rhesus negative blood is a crucial indicator that that individual can trace a lineage back. It means that the soul inhabiting their body now is in an appropriate physical body. And several times on the radio show for the last few years, I've quoted Jesus, seem to know a lot of what he said. And I quote this one, which is, you remember it, those of you who can think back, you don't put new wine into old wine sacks. In the old days, back in the Holy Land, although amphoras of pottery were used, that's really a Greek and a Roman thing. What they did in the hot countries was to use animal skins, which were sewn up, and they would put the wine in those animal skins. Well, if you put a brand new wine, like a Beaujolais Nouveau, though I don't suppose they would have that in Israel, but if you put that into a wineskin that was 20 years old, it would split the wine sack. It would just split and it would all pour out, because the concentration wasn't right. What Jesus was actually saying, because nobody understood him, that's the problem. He was too damned cryptic. He over-anticipated or over-thought their ability to connect with him. Big mistake. If you take a very old, powerful lineage of a soul and place it into a standard human body, the body will collapse. It won't work. So you have to make sure that the physical body is energetically advanced to the same frequency and vibration as the soul you're going to put into that body. So if you were going to have a pharaoh or somebody who's going to come back, that pharaoh would have to go into a body that had the resonation that would equal the history of the soul, so that both could work compatibly. And that body would probably have rhesus negative blood, or its immediate parents would have rhesus negative blood. And it would have green eyes. Depending if it's a male or a female, it would either have red hair or it wouldn't. So there is a pattern. Now, the ordinary unawake people have no clue about this at all. But the elite of this planet are very well aware of it. And so they recruit people, they put people into certain positions. Think of Marilyn Monroe, you know, she was a sex object. What colour eyes did she have? What colour hair did she have? This isn't just some sort of joke. This is a rule that these people are absolutely wedded to, that they follow it through, because it was something that a few thousand years ago, you didn't perhaps wear rank on your arm, you know, I'm a captain or a major or a colonel, but you were judged by the colour of your eyes. So that's what it's all about. So thank you for the question.
Interesting. So This is from our old questioner, Pseudo-Cerberus.
You still can't say it?
No, I can't. Following on from your statement, I'm dyslexic too. I have a slightly different form of dyslexia. Anyway, following on from your statement that Draconis reptilians are a patriarchy, I'd like to ask you about this structure. Firstly, are the males or the females the larger in size? Do females fight? What are considered male occupations and what occupations female?
Interesting.
Also, these beings seem to embrace their animal heritage and being, and their systems reflect this logic. So fertility would seem to factor into rank. Are only some elite beings fertile and the rest neuters? Do you have selected breeders and creches run by the same beings that even the act of bearing and rearing young is a specialism?
I'm going to not remember any of this.
Okay, you got that.
All the questions are really, really good. Right. First of all, the males are physically bigger than the females. They may not be taller, but they are broader and wider. Some females are tall. However, the ruling individual tends to be a good 3 feet taller than anybody else. That's generally the case. There are a number of them that can't procreate quite right. They're not able to. There's a lot of genetic manipulation that goes on. Aldous Huxley wrote a very interesting book, Brave New World, I think it was. And there's some interesting parallels in that. In terms of the sexual side of it, well, no, it's just that the kingdom, for want of a better word, or the empire, is passed down to the child of the current ruler who is closest to the bloodline. So if a king, want of a better word, if a king gets a child through his half-sister, that's considered the absolute best way forward. So if there's nothing else, that child will be king or queen. So you would make your half-sister pregnant, and then you are guaranteeing that child to be king. Now remember, that was exactly the same rule in ancient Egypt, and in Sumeria, and in Babylon. And they all were controlled by the reptilian race, and they all had the same value. In fact, actually, in ancient Egypt, brothers and sisters could do that and have a child. And that then would be the pharaoh. So what that was doing was absolutely maintaining, not through religion. So a Jewish person, for instance, you know, generally speaking, would only take a wife or a husband who was also a Jew. And that was designed to keep the bloodline. But in the royal line case, not only is it within the same faith or the same grouping, but actually the same family. And just the half-sister was the variation to stop the genetics from going mad. Okay, what was the rest of the question, JP?
Okay, male occupations and female occupations. I'll break it down for you, just to keep interacting, sure. Yeah.
Right, that's helpful. Right, okay, well, if you're the High King, your occupation is to be king. So that's a good way to start, isn't it? So that's very easy. Have a throne. And then I suppose you sit there twiddling your thumbs because you think I'm bored. So we've got the king. The king's job is to be the figurehead. Then he would have, I've always said this to people, you know, you need to look at these mosaics of Byzantine. You know, very important to look at these because they are laid out exactly the same because they were very heavily infiltrated by the reptilian culture. And so the king would have 2 to 3 generals, the equivalent of generals, and 1 or 2 civil administrators. And then see the film The Chronicles of Riddick. There was a guy there who was like a priest. He wasn't really a priest. It was very cleverly done, and it was just like the reptilians. His job wasn't to spread religion, but it was to maintain the culture. So if the king or anybody did something which began to take the the culture away from what was prescribed, then his job was to, you know, bring it back. So they have somebody there who is there as a protector of the culture. Though it's the High King's rule, he does that. He will have somebody to advise him. Now what's interesting is that his queen has the mirror image of that, but on a lesser number. So the queen will have one military leader, one general, because she will be advised what the king's generals are advising. One civilian administrator, the equivalent of a lady in waiting, a maid, who's there to make sure that any jewellery that she wears is properly put on. Any, they don't wear many clothes, but the robes are worn correctly. People who have not experienced the reptilians, and you're actually very lucky. But those of you who haven't experienced reptilians would be astounded at the attention to detail. And we see it in the royal families on this planet. There was a wonderful television series called Downton Abbey, which I really enjoyed. And in the opening stages, before the film got going, in the opening stages, they showed Butler measuring with a ruler the distance between the plate and the knife. And in high, high society, there are specified distance that each person should have at his or her place setting. So you have a table, you know, you're going to sit 30 guests. So you allot not just a set space to each person, but the wine glass must be so many inches away from the plate, or the knife must be so many, and the napkin is all done. And that's so reptilian. So what they'll do is they will wear things in certain ways, or they will lay objects out in a room in certain ways. So that is the culture. Now, the vast majority of the ordinary workforce are soldiers, because it is a move, conquer, move, conquer. In other words, we'll go to one star system, we'll conquer that, then we'll go to another star system and we'll conquer that. So they don't have farmers or anything like that, because they take from the societies they conquer. So they will copy things. They're not very good at inventing. In fact, they're absolutely useless at inventing, but they can replicate extensively. They are, as far as I'm concerned, the universe leader in miniaturization. Miniaturization of electronic components, and also genetic manipulation. So they're very, very clever at components that communicate with a biological form. A number of humans have etheric implants in their left shoulder. And if an entity, not just a reptilian, it can be anything, can place its hand on your left shoulder, it will communicate with you through this etheric implant. Also, if you have an etheric implant, I'll give you an example. I've been on a spacecraft, a mantid spacecraft or mantis, and I want to take a reading from the computers. So you don't do what you do on this planet, which is get a clipboard and go round and, you know, look at the dials and the knobs and, or look at the screen and get a readout. What you do is you place, what I do is place my right hand on the left shoulder of the entity. And then through that entity, I can communicate directly with the machine, the computer. So I can be fed a stream of information through that entity, through to me. And I don't then have to walk around with a clipboard. Now, when entities work with humans on an ongoing basis, they will chip in the left shoulder, but it's not a human chip. It's not a grain of rice. It's an etheric implant. And that allows them to communicate. Now, if you are in a, like, connecting consciousness, if you're in a group of people who are spiritually aware, you know, psychically capable, and a number of people, of course, will have interactions, naturally you might find in a social setting somebody putting their hand on the left shoulder of somebody. So it's a hot sunny day and you're out, there's about a group of 20 of you, look for that. Nothing wrong in it at all. But what it means is that person is at ease with other psychic people and is doing what they've always done when they're off this planet, which is put your hand on the left shoulder to get the communication through. What's the next question, JP?
Okay, so that was the occupations. these beings seem to embrace their animal heritage and being, and their systems reflect this logic. So fertility would seem to factor into rank. Are only some elite beings fertile and the rest neutered?
Right. Okay, I think I understand. They don't like the word animal. They really would object to the word animal. In fact, there are very few off-planet species that I've ever met that actually understand why we keep cats and dogs. They don't get it. These places don't have them. They don't have what we have. They don't have that relationship with them. They wouldn't see themselves as being animal. The reptilian race sees itself as more advanced than mammals. And their logic on the face of it seems quite good on the face of it. And that is, well, reptilians or reptiles haven't needed to change. Over many, many, many millions of years, they've survived and they've stayed the same. They've hardly changed. And their argument is that is because they found a niche that they had evolved to the highest form and they no longer need to change. Now, they look on mammals and say, you're weak because you are continually having to change. So you can't survive very well in an environment. You're having to adapt. Now, I've always said, actually, that's a strength, because if I was to take a salamander or something and it's nice hot weather and then suddenly the temperature drops 20 degrees, my salamander's not going to do very well. But if you take a mammal, providing that mammal has enough time to adapt and change, it will adapt in some way. So whereas I see humans as a strength, they see humanity as a weakness, not because it's human per se, but because it's a mammal-based being. But we also have to remember that until relatively recently, science refused to admit the fact that dinosaurs, the old-fashioned dinosaurs, could be warm-blooded. And it's probably accepted now that there was some sort of interphase between they weren't fully cold-blooded and they weren't fully warm-blooded, but nevertheless, there was something there that allowed them to regulate their temperature. So although they've not been mammal, they have been an advanced form of reptilian for a long time. What else was the question, JP?
So that was about whether whether if you're a breeder, I can feel a relationship to my chickens. I had this conversation, whether it was real or not, with my chicken, who, because she was the one that laid the egg, she has this sense of, I am the great creator. I don't know if I'm projecting that onto her, but that was definitely the feeling that I was getting off her. It's like, don't just consider me as like a lowly, you know, feathered person. I'm the great creator and I lay the great eggs of their life. Anyway, so that was one of the questions. So, so fertility, the more fertile you are, the more, ranking you have, or does it not work like that?
Right. 75% of all reptilians are male. In fact, the percentage of female reptilians is greater with the native species, so the group that live under the earth as a native group, that's much more gender balanced. But with the culture of the Draconis and its people, 75% male, 25% female. The females that obviously are in the royal family, obviously it's a completely different little ball game, but if we go back, and I'll talk about your chicken, because what you've said actually makes perfect sense. Now, whether it's true or not, I don't know. But their culture, their history, teaches them that they came from dragons. So Draconis reptilians believe that their forefathers and mothers were dragons. Now, I had the great privilege, and that is what I mean, I had the great privilege of meeting a human person, very human, who contained 100% reptilian soul, who has a very strong memory of walking around on four legs. And this person was one of the original queens, and they did lay eggs. Absolutely they did. And I remember we talked about Ender's Game, and at the end of the film, the hero is taking the egg away to start up a new colony.
That's right.
So these beings have a history which they wouldn't call animal. They have a reptilian history, which they're fiercely proud of. But they don't have gardeners and doctors, and they buy in that sort of technology. You don't often see reptilian doctors. There are some, but you don't often see them. The point is, if you fall in battle, you will either get up and live, or you won't. So that is the way they look at it. It's a very different culture. It's a very, very different culture. Thank you. I think it's tea time.
Yeah, I think it's tea time. I've got a weird record. This is from somebody who sounds very much like Elvis, doing a song very much like a Sting song. So, and welcome back to Connecting Consciousness with Simon Parks. I'm your producer, JP. Are you back with us, Simon?
I am JP, and I'm going to now go and give my thank you list.
Yes.
And for those people who so kindly donated. Some of them donated for the car, and some people just made a general donation. So I want to thank Raymond, Kate, Lutz, Sheila, Kerry, Robinson, Michael K. Thank you, Michael. Imogen, UTE. Daniel, Shirley, Charlene, Nina, Joanne, Raphael, Charlene, Anna, Colin, Bridget, Drumset, Rick, and Rosamond. Rosamond, thank you very much indeed. That was a really helpful donation. Thank you. Claudia, Tobias, Patricia, Frederick, Pamela, Simone, and Ram Trading Solutions, thank you. Very, very grateful. So all of those people, and I know there are others, I can't go through everybody's name, but you know, the list here, some people just donated £1 or $1. Some people have donated more than that. So it's never about how much. It's just literally, I grab a piece of paper and I write the names down, and I do as many as I can get away with. I think it's really important to publicly thank people. I hopefully don't take anything for granted. And you know, that £550 on that car, that could have just completely put me off the road. Well, it did put me off the road, but you know what I mean. I could have been in a situation where I would have been an absolute prisoner. And I know there are people out there who would love the fact that I would be stuck and couldn't go out, couldn't do a talk, or couldn't do this, or couldn't do that. They'd really love it. And so it's not big business that came to my help. It wasn't a politician or anybody like that. It was ordinary, decent people like us who had a few pounds to spare and thought, can't have Simon off the road, got to help him out a little bit. And, you know, I'm so grateful to that. And so I do take the time to thank people. I just can't personally message you back, because I just haven't got the time. I mean, it's just basically me really doing this. So the radio show is the best way that I can thank everybody who donated. So thanks ever so much. Right, on with the show then. Questions.
Next question from somebody. Hello, Simon. I would like to know, when is the next wave of activation for starseeds? Right. When is it going to occur? A lot of starseeds are anxious to know. So if you could please set your light on the subject. Keep up. Anxious starseeds, that's not what you want, is it?
I love it. I think I love it. That's brilliant. The thing is, when you know that you're different, and I should think nearly everyone who listens to this show is different in a positive way, we know that we require tweaking. We require something a lot we can do ourselves, but we do need these waves of energy to come through and do something to the planet and to us. And we know when it happens, because we get hyper or we get terribly tired. At the moment, so many people who are are waking up and already awake, their food pattern is changing. The amount of food they're eating, the type of food they're eating. We've said for a long time now that sleep patterns have been affected. And this is a sign, and I keep on and on saying to you, look, remember you do have a physical body. You do need to still do what you did 20 years ago because you have a physical body. When the day comes when we all have energy bodies, then it's different. But at the moment we have to eat. It's important to do that. And you do need to sleep. And so, you know, what I'm saying to you is that these energy waves probably come through once or twice a year. Sometimes they are designed to take the pattern forward quickly. Sometimes it's much more of a gentle come through. If you think your physical body is blood, bone, cells, tissue, the real you is a vibrating elliptical mass of energy. If you are hit by an energy wave that bathes your body and suddenly the soul in your body leaps forward energetically wise, it is going to leave the body behind. I don't mean it's going to, it's not like an out of body experience where your soul comes away and is attached by a silver cord. And what I mean is that the soul begins to outstrip the capabilities of the body. Earlier I was talking about how the physical body must match the type of soul you've got by and large. Well, if one is out of key with the other, that's when we can get ill, or that's when we can really feel tired. And the physical body has to catch up, because the energy soul is energy, so it responds immediately. But your physical body, there's a time lag. That's why we have our pineal gland and we have our chakras, because they have to, you know, translate this energy, whether we're receiving it or whether we're giving out. It has to be put into a frequency that makes sense at an energy level. So we are slower because we are in a biological body. So often these energy waves will come through and there'll be a gap to give us time for the physical body to catch up before the next wave comes through. If we were hit one after the other, it would just wouldn't work. So we tend to find these energy waves coming through. Now you've asked when the next one is. I was given it and I've lost my piece of paper. It's not surprising really, because it's like a mountain of paper here. But I have been given a date this year for the next one. But remember that star seeds, indigo kids, whatever you want to label you want to use, don't just respond to an activation of energy. If you came here to do a job, and let's face it, many of us did, then sometimes it's about external happenings in a key that activate you. In other words, you might find that two or three things happen in your life. Taken individually, it doesn't do anything. But when they happen in a sequence, that suddenly makes you do something. Or how many times have we heard people say, I've got to move house, or I've got to do this, or I've got to go there. It may not have to do with a bathing of energy. It may have a lot more to do with the internal clock in that person. The alarm clock's gone off. And that individual then goes to the next phase of their development on this planet. You could meet somebody and that could trigger you positively. You could meet somebody and then you start getting some dreams, or you get flashbacks of memory. And from that, you then decide what you're going to do. So don't just wait for an astrologer to tell you, or an astronomer to tell you, that there's this wave of energy coming. You could literally be waiting for a bus and it could happen. That's the beauty of humanity. We can create. And if you are ready to do your next journey, then you create that. That's a good question. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Please don't call him. Oh, right. Long question. I'm not going to do that. Well, actually, what do you think of... all right. It's just that this is an enormous question. All right. Grab your tea. Simon, my name is Jared, and I'm part of a small paranormal investigation team in South Wales known as Paranormal Now. We've been going for about 5 years, and was wondering if you could help us with something that has been happening to us recently. Basically, we've been offering investigations free of charge to people in the South Wales area who are having troubles with spirits in their home. This is something that our group founder has been doing for about 15 years and never charged a penny. During our investigations, we use a range of tools. Richard and I are both mediums. We use a range of devices known as ghost boxes. Some of them are physical radios. Some of them come as apps. The idea of the ghost box is that it sweeps the radio stations, enabling spirits to manipulate the audio to give responses. The one we used as the most is an app developed by Half Paranormal called the SCD2. And we brought people's loved ones through this on many occasions, so decided we would start doing this as a live stream on YouTube. Throughout the last 6 live streams, we've been having responses from entities that refers to themselves as star beings or earth visitors, and make regular references to being on their ship and not being spirits of deceased loved ones. They've offered messages on a range of phenomena from the Mandela effect, the Second Coming, the Ascension process, and have identified themselves as something of 5. Not sure if this is the Council of 5. Both myself, my partner, and Richard have had personal experience with ETs before. Richard many times during meditation, where he'd be stood before a council of about 12 races, and I, about 4 years ago with my partner, had 2 beings appear in my house. They look tall, light-skinned, and can shapeshift. They look translucent, like an apparition, but can be static to the touch. Mm-hmm. All right, so hopefully the question is in here. In 2013, my partner Sam, during our initial encounter, had an experience during our first encounter. She experienced this as a very vivid dream where she was dressed in a white gown in a glass room. She felt as if she was aboard an alien craft and there were others there also. She could not see them, but feel them. She was highly empathic. The experience did frighten her and was validated by one of the responses yesterday during our latest live stream.
Bless you.
What is most strange is that the beings want us to meet with them. Should we? Just wondering if you've ever heard of this type of thing, and can you offer any guidance? Thank you in advance, Jared.
Right. Good question. Right. Well, you set yourselves up as paranormal, but you're not communicating with paranormal, you are connecting with off-planet entities. So you have inadvertently stumbled upon a frequency that allows them to communicate with you. You are playing with fire, but you have had experience before. Both you and this other member of the team have connection with off-planet entities. So it shouldn't surprise you that this is the case. Often, you know, we set out on our life and we do things and we think we've done it out of our own free will. But we have had previous lifetimes and our higher self has said, you know, we want you to do this. And how many people, you know, go back to Egypt for a holiday and they go there and they love it, but they don't realize the reason they're going there is because they had many lifetimes there. So, you know, it is very likely that getting into the paranormal was simply your higher selves or your soul saying to you, come on, get back into this, you know, get the communication going. You know, this is what it's all about. And not exclusively so, but that often is the case. The partner who talked about being in a glass room, that's not good. Because that's like being in a cage, it's like a fish in a fish tank. So she was a prisoner and she was being observed through what she perceived to be glass. You have to be very careful with entities like this. I'm sort of trying to struggle here in the sense that if you set yourself up as a paranormal investigator, what actually are you trying to do? Are you trying to prove that they're real? Or are you actually trying to be like a medium and connect and therefore try to bring peace to loved ones, etc., etc.? That's not really a paranormal investigator. That's more of a medium. An investigator is somebody who does it for 30 years and then says, I never found one proof or shred of evidence. That's normally what you hear. And then there are those paranormal people who say it's absolutely real and, you know, et cetera. So I'm a little bit unclear as to what your role is, because you are taking information from off-planet entities who are feeding you information which could or could not be genuine. And you do have to be very careful. I would suggest that there's a much stronger connection here than you realize. I think you possibly may have sent me an email a while back. It wasn't you, it was another group who wanted to do an interview. And I'll be truthful with you, when I saw the word paranormal investigations, I just thought, no, I won't do it. But if it is the same group, you've actually shown that you're very serious and you have a lot of experience. So if you want to get back in touch with me, I'm quite happy to chat with you. I get a lot of people who just basically think the whole subject's a joke, but you clearly don't. You know it's real. But my concern for you is that you may be getting into something that's trying to manipulate you. Anyway, thank you, and I appreciate you writing in. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Cool, cool. A couple of shows ago, Simon told us that AI can travel in 5G Wi-Fi. Earlier, we had 4G as the fastest speed in cell phone internet. Now the largest Danish phone company are replacing all routers with their customers. They now run two speeds, 4G cable and 5G wireless. Can we recognize infestations? And presumably, what do you do about it?
Yes, this is, you know, absolutely vital. That is why these controlled people are bringing up vast amounts of money to put satellites around the earth to run 5G wireless from satellites. You know, there is absolutely, the cost is phenomenal. What you would normally do is build a phone mast and do it. But there is it's happening, they're launching rockets now, or they're going to launch rockets, Chinese rockets, to put satellites up to smother the earth in 5G. There's no need to do that. They could just run phone masts. It would be a lot cheaper, but they want satellites because they don't want people turning them off. If you have satellites which are ground controlled, then it's easier to get at them and turn them off or sabotage them. But if it's running from space, it's very hard to blanket and stop it. And that is why. And think about the Terminator films with Arnold Schwarzenegger. It was called Skynet. And it was a space-based system as well as an Earth-based system. Manifestations, what the whole object of this blasted 5G is to attempt to create an entity within people. It is to place a energy being. It's not like a djinn, it's not a demon, it's nothing like that. It's more like a fourth dimensional, lower fourth type being, and attempting to get them to infest in a person. Because what AI is doing is attempting to control the nervous system of the human race, because it understands electronics, it understands circuits. And the nearest thing in the human body is the neuron. I mean, one neuron connects and so messages are passed. Although some of it is chemically transmitted, there are electrical impulses. So AI can understand that. And what it would like to do is to try to rewire the brains of people. And 5G is a potential that they see to allow them to rewire the brains of people. The whole object is to turn people into robots. And I don't mean like R2-D2. I mean a biological being that has robotic elements to it, the transhuman agenda. Why else would a corporation or a group of people push, with media and funding, a transhuman agenda when roads have got holes in them, bridges are falling down, police force is underfunded, hospitals underfunded, schools are underfunded? Why would they want to worry about making people robotic? And so whenever the system takes its eye off the ball, such as, you know, well, we could do with a new hospital or the library's fallen down, when it starts talking about these other things, you know it's coming from an evil source. You know, if people put right what's on the planet first, that should be their focus, not these, let's put bloody, sorry for swearing, let's put this 5G around the earth. You know, so what? We can have extra super phone conversations while our ambulance and emergency service collapses, or the fire brigade don't have ladders tall enough to reach up to places like Grenfell Tower. You know, this is what's going on, and basically their agenda is to control the human race, and they don't give a fig about anything else. So I'm hoping that by the time this 5G is about to be rolled out, there will be some changes on this planet which will put a stop to it. You know, I had so many phone calls from people saying, do you want a smart meter? And in the end, I said to this really pleasant young lady on the phone, I am fried enough by Wi-Fi. Why would I want one, you know, in my kitchen? And so she just sort of laughed, and I never got another call from them. You know, this is what they're trying to do. They're trying to push these electronic devices onto us that we have no control over. There's one thing, the good old days of the cathode ray television used to get up, turn it off. Now when you turn your LED television off, it's not really turned off, is it? Because it's still listening to you, or it's still taking pictures of you. And this is what's changed. We have lost control of the technology in our homes because the people who are putting this technology in our homes are never doing it to make our lives easier. They're doing it to control us. That's their agenda. And they are so wealthy and so rich, it doesn't really matter whether it costs them $500 million and they don't actually get their money back, because they're working to orders. And so again, I come back to my point. Please don't anybody tell me that all the bad guys have been locked up, all the reptilians have left the planet, and Archangel Michael is going to come down and hold a tea party. Because if that's the case, why are we still under pressure like this? Why are we still really struggling? So no, the system hasn't changed yet. It is changing. And that's a positive note. It is changing, and we're doing well, but it's not over yet. So I guess AI and the control of the human race, for me, is the most important agenda for the next 18 months. Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to talk about that.
Good, good. Here's a question from Charlene. Now, it's a very, very long question, but I basically want to summarize it in a way, which is, what is the origin of the Jewish race, if there's a, you know, if you could call it a race. But somebody was talking to her. Let me just find the piece.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, go on.
About the, well, oh, I've lost the question now. All right. So essentially, if I summarize it, this is from Charlene, that there was a planet between Mars and Jupiter, which we know. You and I have spoken about this at length, in the past. But she's saying that the Jews came from there, or this man told her that the Jews came from there, and that the origin of the Garden of Eden was not on this earth. What do you think of all of that?
No, I don't.
Okay. What's the origin of the Jews? Let's sort of take it all the way back down again.
Egypt. There are a number of religious leaders who rose to prominence within the faith who were hybridized quite extensively so, but not in the sense that they obviously looked alien, but in the sense that their physical bodies could maintain a soul that vibrated at a certain rate. And we always think about, oh, we're high vibration, it means we're good. It doesn't always mean that. It means that if you are fourth dimensional and you're in a third dimensional body, your body's going to fall apart. It will not cope with it. So you have to have your physical body altered to be able to compete with the demands of the fourth dimensional soul. So some of the Moses, Abraham, were certainly of that line. I don't know what color eyes they had, but it'd be very interesting. The vast majority of the Jewish people were from this planet, and they were prisoners of Egypt, and they were led out, and this is all true, they were led out by certain individuals who themselves had been in line for being a pharaoh. So the people who led them out were very connected and probably were disenfranchised from the royal line. So you basically have got nothing to lose. If you're not going to be pharaoh, then you will take your group out. But there was a religious group who were circumcised. And remember, it's not just the Jewish race that's circumcised. There's an African group and some other groups that circumcise as well. And this is the sign of belonging to a particular race. It's the reptilian race. So it's rather like saying, well, we own you. It's your sign that, you know, you are part of us. And it's very interesting that there is a particular Orthodox Jewish group that wears a hat, but the hat is a little black box that sits right over the forehead and has a band on it. And it reminds me of the Orion cube, and it sits right over the pineal gland. And that to me is negative, not because I'm being anti that particular Jewish group, but because a cube to me means the Orion box or the Orion cube. And if you're wearing it right over where your pineal gland is, that to me means that you're not communicating with Source, you're not communicating with God. So within the Jewish faith, there are a number of groups, and all of them show a very strong control method. So any group could have been chosen. When they say they're the chosen race, they absolutely are. They absolutely are the chosen race. When was the last time they were wiped out? When was the last time they don't? They seem to survive. They seem to keep coming back. And they punch above their weight. And they have access to, through Mossad, they have access to an off-planet group. And they receive support and help. And woe betide any other country on this planet that attempts to get in their way. Because, as I said to you, the status quo hasn't changed in that respect. This group is highly protected and highly looked after. So it is a basically human group that made a covenant with an off-planet force, and providing they don't change their culture, this off-planet force considers that the covenant is not broken. And, you know, we talk about King Solomon and the Templars going to the Mount and finding, and they did find some of these very advanced pieces of technology, and they did bring them back. And they are in Great Britain. Some of them are in America, but most of them are hidden in Britain. And so it's a fascinating topic. Yeah. So, but no, not from another planet. No, no, that's not the case. All right. Thank you.
Right, okay, so, meanwhile, still off-planet, this is from Khalil, it's an interesting question. There's a lot of info about Enki, and not much at all about Prince Enlil, and hardly any about their mother, known as the Queen of Orion here. It said she's an incarnation of the Divine Feminine, and that she created our planet as a living library long before Enki rebelled and took over. Could you talk from your perspective about the Queen of Stars? Many thanks, Khalil.
I have a problem with the word divine feminine if it's not connected to humanity or Source or a planet. So I don't have any difficulty in saying that this planet that we're on is divine feminine. This is a feminine planet. And I don't have a problem thinking of human women as divine women, because they are human and they're connected to Source. You could be alien and feminine and practice a divine feminine. The difficulty is that most of these females don't practice a connection to Source, but they practice a connection to control and power and culture and history. So that's not to denigrate their femininity, but it is to say that the word divine in my book is only suitable when talking about the Earth, human females, and Source, as a divine force. Right. What tends to happen is that when a marauding force, whoever that may be, arrives on a planet, wherever that may be, and they find there's a suitable life form on that planet that they can manipulate and change. They don't take the genetics from the guy that takes the trash out. They take the genetics from the ruling elite. Because what they want to do is to, and I quote, create in our image. You've seen that in the Bible, haven't you? Man was created in our image. And it does say our in the early versions of the Bible. It doesn't say in my image. It says our, because there were gods, of course. It wasn't just one god. So basically the elite would provide its genetics, and we talk about Enlil and Enki, and Anu's genetics were supposed to be used in the upgrading of humanity, not the creation of humanity. Humans were already here, but Anu's genetics were supposed, and Anu thought that his genetics were being used, but actually they weren't. It was one of the boys, one of the sons, substituted his genetics for that of his father's because he wished to tie the human race to him and have more energetic control over them. There's a very complicated law here, but nevertheless. And that is why Enki was quite connected to the human race. And when Enlil was all for wiping out humanity, it was Enki that attempted to try and ameliorate it or warn people. So the questions about the queens. The queens played a role in the development of the first viable humans. And they referred to themselves as the mother, even though they didn't birth all of these humans. They see themselves as the mother, just as Anu sees himself as the father. Oh, hello, that's what we have in the Bible, isn't it? Our Father which art in heaven. So Anu sees himself as the father of all humankind, and Ishtar, that's one name I would know this female as, sees herself as the mother. So it's literally about he or she who wins a war or is in control writes the history books. So the history that we are receiving is the approved history, the history that we are supposed to see. You know, in the future, when you go into Iraq and you take a library book out, will it talk about all of the terrible things that some American military did? Or will it talk about how the American military went in and saved all the people from Saddam Hussein? So he who wins a war writes the history. So we need to be very careful that the history that we're getting is not necessarily coming from the Akashic records. It is the history that we are being projected. But you're right. I call it Ishtar, considers herself the mother. But it's more ceremonial. I don't think I'll go on any more with it, but thank you. That's a good question.
Yeah. Well, everybody always wants to know about the elder family. Let's put it that way. You know, the relationship between Enki and Lil, and so is this being Ninhursag?
Yes.
Is that the same as Ishtar?
It is for me. I would refer to her as Ishtar. Well, actually, there's another way, and I can't remember how I pronounce it. You see, the thing is, you have to be so damn careful. Their names, the name we've been given is the name that we can cope with, because they know that we can't cope with it. If you were to have a true reptilian name, it would be at least a proper sentence long. Some of them are 2 and 3 sentences long, and it is virtually impossible to, with the human voice and the culture, to be able to pronounce it. And if you don't pronounce the name correctly, it's like a servant going up to serve a member of the royal family and dropping the dish of food. It is such an insult to them. So Ninhursag or Sertag, Ishtar is the same for me. It's the same entity, but with a different name. And we have to remember that the brothers fought each other, and the main reason that the Great Pyramid was decommissioned was because one of the brothers holed up in the pyramid, and held out, and in the end, it was a negotiated settlement, but when they went in and then they just, took it apart. All the crystals they smashed. Decommissioned, I think, is the technical term. But, you know, they're always at each other's throats. There's very rarely a time of peace. So, yes, it's very fascinating.
Okay, so... here's from John in the Netherlands. I had my mind made up for silver 8 years ago as an alternative. Prices have been pulled to a low to enable big buying spree by the governments and banks. I think it will increase in value strongly because I don't believe that silver mines will keep producing if return on investment is too small. In 1 month in 2016, Switzerland exported metals like platinum, gold and silver of 7 billion Swiss francs.
Yeah.
I believe it's October. What would you do, he says, what would you do if you had money to invest, I suppose?
Right, well, I just want to add to that. A lot of the downturn in silver is because the gold buyers are forcing down the price of silver. They want to force people to buy gold because they make a profit on that. Simply, it's just simply that. There isn't any ulterior motive other than making money. Most people can't afford gold in a sizable chunk, and so they buy silver. And it began to spike, and it began to hurt the gold market because so many people were buying silver. It became a viable option, and its price on the stock exchange started to grow. And the six men, it's actually three key men and three others, so six in total, but three key men who set the gold price. They meet regularly to set the gold price. It's not, people think it's floating on the market. It isn't. It's three men plus three others who sit around a table and decide how much gold will be that day. That's how awful it is. And President Trump is actually trying to change that. He wants it to be floated as it would on the stock market. But let's get back to the question. So if you can see silver doing very well, but you are Mr. Gold, well, then you need to put rumors out that undermine the silver market. And that's what they did. And that's why the silver price dropped, because they put false rumors out, created a panic, people sold their silver and bought gold. Mr. Gold made more profit. That's exactly what's going on. Now, the question is, what would I do if I had the money? I would buy gold. Not because silver isn't worth it, but if you've got that amount of money, it is worth buying gold. Look, if you buy a bar of gold, was it $26,500 or pounds, I think, you buy an ingot of gold, you cannot go to the 7-Eleven, to the supermarket and say, I want to exchange this for a loaf of bread. You can't go to a shop, unless you're in some huge big city. You can't go to a shop and say, I've got this gold bar of 26,500, will you buy it for me? Because they don't keep that sort of money in the shop. If you've got that sort of gold, you're trading it. Now, how do we know that the governments aren't going to sort of ban trading in gold? They might say private citizens can't trade gold. They may make it illegal. You know, remember what happened in America where they set the gold price and then they forced people, American people, to go and sell their gold to the bank. And then when they'd got in enough of it, they doubled the price overnight. So you sold your gold for a set price and then they doubled it up. So we have to be very careful that when we buy a precious metal thinking that we are protecting ourselves, we are possibly inadvertently putting ourselves into a bit of a corner. So what would I do? I would buy gold, but I wouldn't keep it in this country. I would buy gold and have it out of the country. I would have it in a country that wasn't part of the American control network. If I had less money than the money you talked about, I would buy silver. If you've got silver coins or silver ingots, you can actually trade those locally because we're not talking huge amounts of money. Whereas if you're talking gold, I mean, you know what's going to happen if we get a disaster. People are going to start trading in their rings or their necklaces. You know, that the shop will do. If you've got a gold necklace, which may be worth a few hundred, well, the shop will do that. So that'll be the first things that go. You know, when Hitler turned on the Jews and the Jews started pawning their stuff, that's the first thing they did, was sell the jewelry before they had to start selling their clothes. So, if you've got huge amounts of money to spend, then it's gold. If you've got less amount of money to spend, then it's silver. So that's my advice.
So,
I thought we'd been cut off then.
No, I was being asked what soup do I want. sorry, I had the mic muted.
We get music as well.
Yeah, yeah. All right, here we go. Now, there's a lot of people, you know, worry about stuff like this. From you, I think it's Rui Jorge, oh, George. Anyway, I'd like to know if Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton and Putin are hybrids, or what are they exactly? Are they clones or reptilian hybrids? What's the deal with these weird people?
No. The one who's mostly hybridized is actually President Putin. He's the one the most hybridized. None of them are clones. Putin has to be hybridized because he contains a fifth dimensional soul in his body. And if he didn't, it wouldn't be able to survive in his body very well. Remember that Putin had a near-death experience. He was involved in a car crash back in the 90s. And, there's some very interesting things that happened after that car crash. So Donald Trump is not a clone. And Hillary Clinton's not a clone, but in Hillary Clinton's point of view, it was all about mind control. The woman was totally blackmailed, mind controlled. You don't have to necessarily clone a person to control them. You just do it through blackmail. I don't know, what is the figure? 50% of all lawmakers are being blackmailed? Something like that?
Only 50?
Well, that's
you know,
I'm being kind. No, basically, none of them are clones. But Putin is more hybridized than the others. He has to be because he's got this fifth dimensional soul in his body.
So
that is why you've got photographs of, I showed photographs of Putin at my conference that I did in London some months back with him swimming with dolphins. There's a picture of him, you know, with all the dolphins around him. That should tell any Palladian out there exactly what and who President Putin is. And so, why fourth dimensional people don't like him.
And I've got this theory. I've seen quite a few statements from other people about it. But that, like any very rich person, Trump himself has a body double who looks very like him, but isn't him, and is very, you know, you can see those skin tone differences and things like that. What's your intel on this, Simon?
Absolutely. That was one of the first things that his, the generals told him to do. Putin has three body doubles.
Mm-hmm.
I think Trump has got one body double because he's a big man.
Mm.
It was very difficult to find somebody who looked close enough to him. I understand that they've got one person who's pretty damn good, but there wasn't anybody else.
Mm.
But he was given this advice by the military before he was even elected. So yes, absolutely. Mm. Look at the Second World War.
Monty.
British General, Monty had a double. They've all done it.
They're all at it. They're all...
The only person who didn't, actually, was Admiral Lord Nelson.
Mm.
If Admiral Lord Nelson had a double up on the poop deck of the Battle of Trafalgar, Admiral Lord Nelson would still be alive. But...
Well, he'd be dead by now, but I mean, yeah, I see what you mean.
Oh, very funny. But the reason that he didn't have a body double was because he had only one arm. And so trying to find someone to say, look, you look just like me. Can I chop your arm off, please? You know, so that you really do look like me. There are no takers for that, surprisingly.
That takes a lot of loyalty, doesn't it?
Well, that's not going to happen, is it? So that's why he didn't have a body double. But people who are able-bodied generally can find someone who looks reasonably similar, and they go through all the makeup and all the rest of it. But yes, major people who live in fear of their lives certainly do have doubles.
Okay, right. All right. Here from UB70. Dear Simon and JP, thank you for your service to humanity. Is it true that some alien races consume human flesh just as some humans consume the flesh of cows and chickens? If so, which ones?
There's actually more than one, but the one that the person is angling for me to talk about, from a positive reason, is literally the Draconis reptilian group. And it's a really good question, because very, very few people will accept that there is an alien race that eats children, babies. They just couldn't accept it, because it's just too much beyond their conception. They just can't get it. But the reason it goes on, apart from what it gives these creatures, is that they say that they're allowed to do that. Because they say, on the planet Earth, the indigenous population is the human race, and it is the most advanced of all the life forms, cats, dogs, parrots, what have you. And it eats these animals. It eats fish, it eats dog, it eats cat, it eats cows, it eats them. So their argument is, we are more advanced than the human race, so why can't we eat you? Now, when you put it like that to people who are, you know, not really into our understanding, then that's quite of a shocker for them. Now, if everybody, every human tomorrow stopped eating meat, it would, at a stroke, change the whole energetic movement of the planet. In other words, the law, the rule that these creatures use would fall apart. Because if the human race stopped eating meat, as a man and a woman, then they would not be able to do it. And one of the major reasons that we are encouraged to eat meat, and farmers are very well looked after generally, and it's a huge big business, is simply because as long as the energy stays that way, they can justifiable in their mind, they can justifiably carry on eating. And the reason they'll do it is because they require first of all, there's an energy release from people who are about to die. Secondly, there's a chemical release. And thirdly, if you consume the blood, it can prolong the life of these creatures when mixed with other things. So they believe they have an absolute right to do this. And where do we think all these missing children go? You know, and I've talked about it, and people have lost their lives. You know, you can talk about UFOs and aliens and bug-eyed monsters, and the system tinkers around with you. But when you start talking about missing children, and you go and interview senior police officers or social workers, then you know your life is in danger, because this is one of those taboo subjects, a bit like 9/11. It's one of the taboo subjects that they really don't want you to go about, because they can laugh you off. Oh, I saw a flying saucer. Ha, ha, ha. You must be mad. Oh, I found a dismembered child in the New Forest. Oh, we can't laugh that off. And then the newspapers get involved, etc., etc. So there's a multi-million pound trafficking of children, and some of the household names are involved. Organizations, corporations headed by the most unsavory individuals that we would ever not want to meet, specifically moving children around for this purpose. The number of children that go missing in the Western world with all our internet technology, our advanced police force, satellites, all of that, it just wouldn't happen. Yes, you'd always have some people who go missing, and if you intend to go missing, you're going to do your best to go missing. But the number, we're talking thousands. Yes, lots are found, but we're still talking thousands that are not recovered and not ever heard of from again. Some of them go off planet. Some of them go on to underground bases. Some of them, you know, end up this, that and the other. And because humanity generally is so good, people are actually genuinely really good. They can't believe that anybody could be this evil. They can't believe there's this huge conspiracy. They can't believe that this great network, this pyramid of intrigue and evil has been built around them. They can't believe it because they wouldn't do it themselves. And if you're a good person and you don't think about evil, you don't think about you doing yourself evil, you naturally don't think others would do it. And when something happens and it's presented to you and proved, you go into shock because you think, A, how could they do that? B, why did I never see this? You know, that's the denial part of it, that, oh goodness me, you know, these people about 9/11 who took like years and years to see the truth, half of the problem was, for goodness me, all these years I accepted the lie. How could I be so stupid? How could I have been so silly? How could I have been so blind? So you're not just overcoming people's fear of the subject. You're also overcoming an ego, which is you have to accept that you've been hoodwinked for all these years. That's harder for many people than to accept what's going on. So it's a double whammy, really.
It is. It's harder to tell someone they've been fooled than to fool them. Yes. Simon, we're well out of time. Thank you very much. We'll see you in 2 weeks, I hope.
Yes.
You're
lovely.
You'll be back.
God bless to everybody.
Have a good vacation. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.